it's Melissa Moore. And during Mental Health Awareness Month in May, one of the things that a lot of people bring up and talk about is mental health and addiction and what we've all been through since the pandemic. So there's no better person than my friend Kevin Peterson, licensed marriage and family therapist and also an addiction expert. And he is founder of the Chronic Hope Institute. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Melissa, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. It's always good to talk to you. I always love our conversations, and I love how honest and blunt you are. So I'm like, you're the perfect person for this part of the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, honest and blunt is the only way to go.
It is. All right. So let's talk about what our mental health has been like, because I feel like since the pandemic, it hasn't been good. And I don't know if the pandemic just shined a light on it, or if I think a lot of us have had just trouble dealing with so much stuff since then.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting, I mean, there's still the jury's still out as far as the actual like numbers and figuring everything out. But that's a great question is, you know, what did the pandemic do? I mean, it certainly didn't help anyone by being cooped up.
Right.
And eliminating this opportunity to engage with others and be part of your community.
Yes.
I mean, it rearranged everybody's life.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And, you know, as far as here's one of the things I would tell you, the long-term impacts on mental health or that whole process. I actually had a great conversation with another therapist in Colorado, Dr. Michael Barnes, who I absolutely love and adore. And I said, you know, this is about 6 months into it. I said, this reminds me of what it's like to be trapped as a kid in a dysfunctional family.
Mm.
Mom and dad are fighting and they're not agreeing, right? So remember back during the thick of it, there was just this constant battle about what's true and what's not true.
Right, right.
You know? And when mom and dad are locked into a fight, nobody's watching the kids.
Yep.
And so the kids, which, you know, if you can follow my analogy, which is like the general population, they start acting out. And they start acting out in very traditional fashions. You know, there's the hero child. I'm going to fix everybody. I'm going to take care of everything. I'm going to make sure everything's okay.
Yep.
You know, we call those people therapists, teachers, nurses, doctors.
Yes.
You know, and they take on too much. But that's what they do. And then we have the traditional, you know, the fight, flight, freeze, right? But those are three different people that we have, the fighters. And you definitely saw it then. There were people that were looking for a fight.
Yep.
Because that's how they react to stress and anxiety and change. You know, they go into a fight mode, you know. And then we had the flight people. And the flight people, you know, got into their closets and shut the door and hid out, and some of them are still there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Yes. Very much so.
And the freeze people too. The freeze people just kind of get locked up. And then, you know, we definitely, you know, tying this back to your question about addiction, what we definitely saw was a lot of people turning towards drugs and alcohol to relieve all those things I was talking about, you know, all those behaviors.
Right.
And was it, did the rates of addiction go up or down? That's a tough question to ask. The addiction rates are always generally about 8 to 12% of the population. Did usage go up? Yes, it went up tremendously.
Right.
No questions asked.
Right.
And which was really a struggle, because the traditional way of getting help for addiction is going into an inpatient treatment program, which is tough when you're under a COVID lockdown.
And virtual is just not the same.
It's not, but it's a double-edged sword, right? Because for the mental health world, what the pandemic proved to us was virtual is an option.
True.
I mean, and for people that can't access it, or that's the only way they can access it, or for whatever, oh my God, it was an absolute explosion for them, and it was wonderful. But for what you're talking about, and your statement is absolutely true, there were a lot of people that were like, I miss connecting with people. I miss talking, and then staring at a screen is not cutting it. And so we kind of had this weird mixture back and forth. You know, back to that analogy of the dysfunctional family, you know, we all just sort of we were all looking for someone to comfort us and care for us and love on us. And that was the big challenge, you know, is that everyone was kind of at each other's throat. And I think everyone got really scared.
I was just getting ready to say, I feel like there was just this underlying current of fear through that whole time. And I feel like part of it is still there. And so even though we're back together with people and we're doing things and we're being social, all of a sudden now you have this current of fear, like, oh my gosh, what if it happened again? Like, I can't go through that again. I feel like I barely made it out this time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also, I think it became, you know, I mean, our society, not to get too overwhelming on this, but, you know, sort of always, there's been a prevalence of an us-them mentality over the last 10 or 20 years. It really sunk in, you know, starting in 2020 and going forward. So it's not just, you know, everyone's kind of like walking on eggshells. Everyone's kind of walking on eggshells, looking at the other people like, well, you know, are you on my team? Are you on their team?
And,
the divide got a lot bigger, is I guess the way I would phrase that.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think I go back to that dysfunctional family analogy that we talked about earlier, is that, you know, instead of having a system, and again, I'm not picking sides or blaming or finger pointing to one side or the other, but instead of having a system where someone was saying, hey, you know, we're going to take care of you, everything's going to be okay, we're going to figure this out, and yes, this sucks, and yes, this is hard, but we're going to, you know, what we had was like a two competing entities that were sort of throwing down and shouting at each other down and pointing fingers. And again, it's like mom and dad are fighting.
Yeah.
And when mom and dad are fighting, it scares the kids. And also nobody's taking care of the kids.
Right.
You know, so when you take a look at the country as a generalized, you know, I'm a marriage and family therapist. When you take a look at the family as a family or the country as a family system, you know, the family system needs, everyone has a role to play. There's going to be someone that does comforting. There's someone that does leading, someone that's working, you know, and that got severely disrupted. And I'm not even sure it's been put back together, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't feel like it has. I feel like we are still feeling the effects of it, because I feel like we still have a little bit of that fear. And now you have the financial piece of it, too, because we go through this very traumatic time only to come out and then get hit financially hard. Which affects everything.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you turn on the news and what do you watch? You know, it's a lot of the same players are having the same arguments and the same fights.
You just don't feel that peace. And I think that's it. As you talk about the dysfunctional family analogy, you don't feel taken care of. You don't feel safe. And I think that's a big part that then leads me into our conversation with addictions and what we're seeing right now.
Yeah. So obviously what's happened in the last 4 years, since the whole COVID thing erupted, is we've certainly seen the fentanyl crisis really take hold. You know, and it's become really, really bad in this. And what we're talking about there is, and it's not even sort of much of an addiction thing as much of it is more of a people that are recreationally using drugs, which I'm not saying is a good idea. I think it's a terrible idea. But what they're doing is they're getting a hold of drugs that are laced with fentanyl and they're dying.
Mm.
So, you know, at a time when, you know, when people were looking for some sort of comfort, because, you know, if they don't get comfort from each other or from their family system, they're going to seek outside sources.
Sure.
So we definitely saw, you know, and like I said, it's a double-edged sword, right? We found out that, hey, you can actually do therapy and mental health work online.
Yep.
We also found out that people will deliver alcohol and drugs to your doorstep.
Oh, that was a big thing here in Colorado is having alcohol delivered. Hey, you want fajitas at your house? How about a pitcher of margaritas, too? People are like, well, sure, why not? Throw that in there.
Yeah. And then, you know, the people that, you know, that sell drugs were also like, hey, we understand you can't come to us, so let me know. I'll just drop on by.
Right.
You know?
It's like, and, what?
Yeah.
What is going on?
While we were offering positive services, sort of the destructive stuff also took a huge rise as well, you know, to create convenience. And again, it all comes from, like we're talking about, people's mental health is suffering because we're under this immense amount of stress and anxiety and disruption to our system. And so when that happens, people turn towards comfort. What's going to make me feel better?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And it can, a lot of times it's, you know, the other thing that took a huge rise is gambling, online gambling.
Oh, interesting. You know? I didn't realize that, but it makes sense.
Yeah, it did. It really did. And so the drugs, the alcohol, food, you know, the online gambling, you know, real people were just turning toward things that they could find comfort in. And unfortunately, a lot of those things are self-destructive.
Right. Even the food. I mean, when you said food, I went, you know what? You're so right. Because how many people did we see come out of COVID and they'd been working at home? They're like, yeah, I put on 30 pounds. I put on 40 pounds because they were eating for comfort.
Yeah. And they were basically, you know, I mean, remember the first 3 or 4 months, they were basically being told, don't go outside.
Oh, yeah. It was awful. It was awful. Yeah. Like, oh, if you're on a trail and you go by somebody, give them plenty of room. And you're like, there's not enough room on the trail.
Yeah. Well, and even, yes. And also to the level of you shouldn't even be there in the first
place.
Exactly. Because we don't know what's going on. This thing could, you know, if you open the door, this thing could jump out and get you.
Yeah. That's how it felt.
And, you know, there was still a lot of that belief system. And I think there's still a lot of that belief system.
Yeah.
You know,
I think so
and
too.
And again, it goes back to being, you know, presented with a lot of fear and anxiety and stress and not having anything to turn around and say, okay, hey, you know, we're here, we're helping, we're working on it, and we're going to take care of it.
Yep.
You know,
there wasn't that comfort.
No, there wasn't. So people, when that happens, people will seek their own comfort.
Absolutely. It makes a lot of sense.
So we definitely saw a huge rise in people that were struggling with alcohol, struggling with drugs, struggling with gambling, struggling with porn. You know, shopping. I mean, you know, Amazon thought it was fantastic.
Right.
You know, all the online delivery systems because people went nuts to make themselves feel better. And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, totally true. So where are we today? I mean, that's what happened. That's what triggered it. What are you seeing today as a therapist that specializes in families and kids and addiction?
Well, one of the interesting things that happened in that, for, let's say, 2020, 2021, and even part of 2022 is, a lot of families may have understood that someone in the family was struggling with drugs and alcohol or maybe used drugs and alcohol, but they were like, oh, you know, it's no big deal, blah, 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 blah. But when we all had to live together under the same roof, we kind of got found out.
Yep.
The covers got pulled back and you're like, oh, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So the good news is people that were having problems, that were struggling and having problems and needed help, actually got to a space where people around them were like, hey, that's not healthy. You need to get some help.
Right.
And so that was a good thing, you know, and we've definitely seen in the last 2 years where people are starting to turn back towards, you know, more therapy, more treatment, you know, more help in the traditional community sense of how to get help and where to go and what to do. And realizing that it's more acceptable and it's got a much smaller stigma because now everybody's dealing with it. I always try to see the positive side of it, but, you know, that I would say is one of the huge positives is that, you know, yes, people got contained and they kind of got found out, but they also found out that there were solutions for people that needed help.
Very true. And what about the people who were kind of borderline and it kicked their drinking up or it kicked their whatever it was up?
I think what's happened, with folks that were, you know, like you said, kind of on the edge and, you know, not sure what to do. The really cool part, or not cool, but the interesting thing part has happened is that families have become a lot more aware, you know, and they've also become a lot more aware of what to look for and what the resources are. And so while at the same time we saw this huge rise in people abusing drugs and alcohol, we also saw a huge rise in services available for those people through non-traditional methodology, you know, through the online systems and that sort of thing. And, you know, there's all sorts of, you know, there's Headway and all these other different companies that you can get help with online. So it was, again, it's the double-edged sword, right? It's like, sure, people were definitely trying to, you know, soothe themselves and self-medicate themselves. But at the same time, there was a huge rise of opportunities for people to get help and for how to help, like for your family or the people you were engaged with to be like, hey, I don't think that's a good choice. We're kind of coming out of the storm now.
You know,
it's 4 years later and we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. Let's try to get back to a space where we're taking better care of ourselves. And there certainly are more options and more opportunities to do that.
Are you seeing people that are still struggling that, you know, maybe it started 4 years ago for them and they're still struggling today?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely people that are where the trauma of that situation kind of really embedded into them, and they really haven't pulled out of it yet. And some of those folks are self-medicating. Some of them have more of a severe mental illness issue. So it's across the board. I wouldn't say it's just addiction. I think mm-hmm. it's also people that are still kind of hiding out. They're still staying home. They're still doing a lot of online stuff. They're not kind of re-engaging with society. And so that is definitely a concern in the mental health world. It's like, hey, it's 4 years later. People are okay. You can come back out. You can come out of the cave now and get back and re-engage. And I think people are really a little reluctant and a little scared.
I was going to say, what do you think is fueling that? Because I've seen lots of folks, some that I know very well, that are just not the same still. They're still yeah. very reserved and more, I don't want to say homebodies, because that's not a bad thing to be, but they're just not engaged with life.
I think that's a natural, that is a natural thing that occurs when we go through such a severe trauma event and it continued to last. I would sort of venture to say that the entire country or the entire family system of our country is sort of suffering from a giant PTSD event.
That's what I wondered. Okay.
Yeah, totally. And everybody kind of responds to that differently. Some people are, wake up and they're like, okay, I need to get some help and I need to get out of here. I need to put this behind me and I need to get going. And some people keep hiding in the cave or hiding in the home. And some people, still continue to do their self-medication. But I think what also is happening is that as we go back to more of a normalized society, people are starting to realize there's a lot more resources available for them.
Yes.
And so are we back to normal? No, I wouldn't expect us to be back to normal. That was a huge, it was a big deal. Everybody knows people that died and, mm-hmm. Entire worlds and new concepts and nations got rearranged. And so it's not something where 3 weeks later, you're like, wow, that was a bad storm.
Right. Yeah. So true.
This was a once in a generation issue and it's going to take us some time to come back from it. And we just got back from a 2-week trip. And let me tell you, on the plane and everything and on the boats that we were on and the hotels we were staying at, there are still people walking around with masks on.
Oh, absolutely.
And there were, hand sanitizer everywhere we went, and people that were like, we took a 7-day cruise from New York to Southampton, England. Mm-hmm. And everywhere you went, there was a member of the crew, handing out hand sanitizer and putting little, squeezes in your hand. And so they're still taking it very, very, very seriously.
How does that feel? I mean, when you see that as a mental health professional that you are, what goes through your mind as you see the mask and you see the hand sanitizer? What did you think?
I was grateful for them having those kind of precautions and being aware that there's probably still people that are concerned about this.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely a little taken back, but I was a little bit sort of like, oh, that's interesting, the number of people that were wearing masks,
yeah,
and still doing that. And I get it. Generally the people that are on a ship are a little bit older. So, I'm sure that population still feels like, hey, that really hit our section really
right.
hard.
Right.
And, I think another part of me was just kind of like, huh, how do we explain this to kids that are, in 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, how do we sit down and talk to kids and say, yeah, we had this really interesting situation where the entire country, the entire world got shut down for a year and a half, 2 years.
Yep.
And it really rearranged everything. And it rearranged everything physically and mentally and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And it really freaked everybody out. And the after effects, they're still here.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I know I feel it now maybe more than I ever have. In a different kind of way, though. Like, I found a mask in one of the pockets of my coats not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, gosh, I don't ever want to go back there. And I threw it away. I was like, nope,
yeah.
I'm not keeping this for a what if. Like, that
yeah.
sucker's going in the trash because I'm not going down that road.
I completely understand, and that's a normal reaction.
Yeah, you know? But
and
it
that
felt...
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it felt so strong when I pulled that mask out of a coat that I hadn't worn, obviously, in a few years. And just the physical effect it had on me of seeing it was like, oh my gosh, that was our life.
Yeah, well, that's a trauma response. I mean, the thing is, we all have to acknowledge and understand that this is real. We all went through a severe trauma situation, and that's a normal response to that. Like, oh my God, I'm not even want to think about that.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and everyone's going to respond to it slightly differently, you know, but I think everyone needs to acknowledge and understand that, you know, this happened, and therefore, you know, don't be shy to talk to somebody, seek out some help, go engage with, you know, a therapist or a group or whatever your community is, and have this conversation and just have these open talks about, God, you know, the other day I found a mask in my pocket of my jacket and it kind of freaked me out, you know, and have that conversation.
Well, that was kind of led into my next question for you. How do you know as somebody, whether it's because of the pandemic or because of something else going on in your life, how do you know when you need professional help?
That's a great question. And what I would say is that if you feel, I mean, the first thing that we always try to tell people is take a look at your sleep patterns, you know, and if you're not getting, you know, if you're not sleeping regularly, I mean, I think the general idea is to get somewhere between 6 and 8 hours a night. But if you're not getting uninterrupted sleep the majority of the nights of the week, that's probably the first thing I would take a look at, you know, and say, okay, so I'm not, because the important thing about sleep is it allows your body to relax and repair itself, and your brain as well, not just your physical structure, but your mental structure as well. Your body needs to come down off red alert and be able to sort of nurture itself and repair itself and heal itself. So the first thing I would always look at is, you know, take a look at your sleep patterns and how are they? And then the second thing is, you know, take a look at your relations and how you're getting along with other people. One of the things that I know I've talked to about other therapists and, you know, about us individually and our client base, I said, does it still feel like people are, you know, one bad look away from getting into a street fight?
It's you a know? Great analogy, like, yes.
Well, I mean, you know, like if that guy cuts me off,
yes.
I'm going to ram him, you
yes.
know?
Yes.
And that's another thing. I mean, being at the ragged edge or being, you know, one step away from being, you know, willing to go at it. And I know that sounds a little goofy, but, you know, you say that to people and they're like, oh, my God, I thought it was just me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that will resonate with a lot of people.
Yeah, that's definitely something I would. Again, that's a trauma response. And that's something you definitely need to sit down and talk to somebody about who's trained in understanding that and saying, oh, okay, so you're running around all day long at like an 11 or a 12 out of 10, you know, let's get you down to like a 5 or a 6,
right?
You know,
right.
And, you know, cause that's definitely, I mean, I see that all, I mean, you watch the news. I mean, that's what you see all day long is these people in these average everyday situations, you know, completely over escalating and freaking out about something. And, you know, when the dust settles, they're like, so what was this all about? It was like, well, you know, he looked at me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, whoa, when did we get there?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that would be the other thing I would take a look at. Definitely look at your sleep. Take a look at where you are on sort of the stress scale, you know, and then I would say, take a look at yourself physically. You know, are you struggling with exercise? Are you struggling with your nutrition? You know, are you struggling with being able to relax? And if you are, then, you know, therapy doesn't always have to be, you know, you don't have to be crazy to go see a therapist.
I think that's such great advice. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, cause that definitely people are always like, well, I don't need therapy. I'm not crazy. It's like, nobody said you were,
right.
You know? What we're saying is you're not having a calm, peaceful reaction to the things that are going on in your life. Maybe you should talk to somebody that can sort of help you get back to that space.
That's really good advice. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that can be achieved through, you know, using a combination of exercise, nutrition, meditation, community, and therapy. You know, I think all of those things combined and bringing yourself into a space where you're asking for help, you're engaging with other people, and you're practicing self-care, you know, and if those things aren't sort of, you know, priorities or touch points in your day-to-day life, you know, don't be afraid to ask somebody to help you get back on track.
I love that. And I love that you've always said that, because you really do talk about the whole person well-being. And I have always appreciated that you point that out.
Oh, it's my pleasure, because I think that's the truth. You know, one other thing I'm going to tell you, I would just tell you as a fact of someone who's been a therapist, you know, for over 15 years, is most of the people that I work with, they just want someone to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just want to talk something out and say, here's what's going on in my head. I just need somebody to put this on the table and have somebody who's trained to be able to look at it and say, okay, let's figure this out together.
Yeah.
You know, they're not coming to me with, you know, oh my God, I'm going to jump off a ledge, or, you know, oh my God, I'm ready to run away and hide in the woods. It's like, okay, cool. Let's sort through what's going on and let's just have a chat. And, you know, therapy doesn't have to last for, you know, years. It can be situational. Like, I have this situation that's really upsetting me or really concerning me, or it's this day-to-day thought process that I can't get past. Okay, cool. Come on in and let's figure it out together.
For people who maybe have never been to a therapist before, I think the things that you just touched on are some of the parts that are like, well, I'm not crazy and I don't want to do it for the rest of my life. And that's kind of there. And you're like, where did you feel like that was the only two options?
Yeah, well, I think that's generally the general public's idea of what therapy is, you know, it's for somebody that's really incredibly emotionally unstable and is struggling with their day-to-day existence. And let's be clear, there are people like that, and those people need help, and God bless them. Let's help them.
Right.
But I think, you know, everybody could use somebody to sit and chat with and just sort of air things out and be like, hey, I got this stuff going on, and, you know, I don't feel like it's appropriate for me to share at work or share with my family. And, you know, my family, my friends love me, but they're not trained professionals who are going to sit down with me and be analytical and then also come up with some solution-based stuff.
And I think the other part that I always feel like when I talk to you is that you're always on the side of your clients.
Yeah.
I mean, their biggest advocate.
Oh, yeah. I want them. My position on therapy is, you know, let's figure out some solutions. Let's put together like a game plan. Let's get some homework. And then when we meet again, you know, let's see how that's going.
And I love that, because you work with them, but you also put some of the onus on the person. Hey, you got to do some work. You don't get to just come in and dump. You've got to do some work.
Yeah, if I could magically make people feel all better by just coming and chatting with me, you know, I would, I'd be retired. You
know? That is a good point.
I haven't got there yet, but, you know, I definitely think, you know, the goal is to work with people and engage with people and say, hey, you know, come on in and let's talk about what's going on. One of my favorite phrases that I've come up with is, I tell my clients, you know, people are like jigsaw puzzles. The more you talk, the more pieces of the puzzle I get, you know, and I can put the puzzle together and then I can see which pieces are missing. And I'm like, oh, okay, now I understand. Let's do this, and this.
Right. Yeah. As Kevin's friend, I can tell you this is true. Whenever I talk, he just listens and he looks at me.
It's my pleasure. I adore you. I love talking to you.
I know. You're always like, oh, okay. And I'm like, oh, dang it. What did I just reveal?
Yeah, I got to work on that better.
You have no poker face, which I love.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love it. You know, I love what I do. And it's, you know, when I first met with the dean of students at Regis University for the counseling program, a guy named John Arnes, and I said, you know, I was 43. I said, I really think this is what I want to do. And he's like, Kevin, therapy is like a calling. It's a calling. It's like teaching or going into the ministry. It's who you are.
Right. Very
you know,
true.
And it's who you've been since day one.
Oh.
And you'll figure that out really quickly.
Yeah.
And that's it. I found my calling. This is my thing.
It is your thing. That is for sure. Kevin Peterson, licensed marriage and family therapist, addiction expert, and he has a Chronic Hope Institute. For folks that would like to get in touch with you, maybe work with you or some of the others on your team, what do they need to do?
Well, you know, they can always just pick up the phone and call 720-541-6289. They can go to the website, chronichope.us. Our other website, our therapy website, is petersonfamilycounseling.com. And they can always send us an email or send us a text or whatever they want to do or call us. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, a lot of the phone calls that I take are people that are probably not a good solution for us, but I always help them find the right person.
And that is so huge. When you need help, to be able to find somebody to help you, even if it's just point you in a different direction.
Yeah. No, it's my pleasure. I have a big, nice, big network, especially in Colorado, of people that take all the different kinds of insurances, do all the different kinds of work. So when somebody calls and says, hey, I have to see someone who takes Cigna and I need this done, I'm like, oh, you should call this person.
I love that you do that. Well, you are one of my favorite people. I so appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. The feeling is quite mutual.